everybody, and welcome to episode 30 of Here We Go Again, Israeli Politics. Soldiers are exonerated. We play the good, the bad, and the ugly with the government's law and Bennett's actions. And a bombshell interview with Trump drops. This is Here We Go Again. Okay, for our first topic.
First, we are very happy to announce that the two soldiers that dealt with the terrorist attack last week have officially been let off, and the case against them has been closed for innocence, and not for lack of evidence or for lack of public interest. It has closed, and they have been found innocent on all accounts in this matter. This is very good news and sets a good precedent moving forward with different soldiers on how we react to soldiers defending themselves and the people they are meant to protect.
I think that there's the interesting part here. There's twofold. First thing is that we said this last week, they shouldn't have even been investigated in the first place. Again, there is the investigation that happens automatically anytime there's a shooting, but that's a very small, that's not a chakira be'azara, as they call them, which are called into a criminal investigation, which they shouldn't have opened in the first place. Although once they opened it, obviously we are happy with the results of complete innocence. Now, the interesting part to see here, and we saw it start it last week and end it this week, is I believe the public pressure shifted in this more left-wing government, which is very interesting. When we were at a complete right-wing government, all the parties were right-wing, suddenly there was a ton of pressure to investigate and to stop and to tie the soldiers' hands down. And I'm not saying they're not still doing it now, but a much, much less. And I think that there's a reasoning behind it. When the entire coalition theoretically is right-wing and the opposition is left-wing, then the left-wing's job is to always be in opposition. Therefore, the second a soldier does anything that you know is a little too aggressive to their eyes, they're attacking and they're bombing, and then the media jumps onto it, and then the coalition is forced into a position where they have to take a stance.
Well, I don't like that in general. That appears to be the opposition, and it's not true in every country. It might be true in certain times. An opposition can be a responsible opposition. They have things they want to push forward. And I also think that's a better political stance and getting elected than just being always in an opposition to whoever's elected.
So we can get into that debate, and that's a very interesting one. But factually on the ground in this country for the last 20 years, the opposition is in opposition to the coalition. So they try to tear down and attack the coalition in any situation. Now, what's interesting here, and we've seen this in many other factors, and I think we're going to continue seeing this, because the core of the left-wing parties are part of the coalition, and the coalition's job by definition is to keep everything quiet. The coalition's job is to try to have everything flow and not make a big deal about events because they don't want too much going on. Therefore, the left-wing parties that are in the coalition are not going to make a big deal out of this because they don't have what to gain from this. And the right-wing parties in the opposition are obviously supporting the soldiers because they're right-wing parties. So you actually end up as a 120-member Knesset. You are a more right-wing Knesset because the left-wing is in the coalition. This is something that I think we'll see forward more and more throughout this government.
I completely agree, which can help lead us into our next topic. Problems with this government. Whilst there are good sides and downsides to having the left as a big part of this government, some of the bigger downsides are some of the laws that are being pushed forward at the moment. We've mentioned in the past some of the laws we are very supportive of, be it Chok HaKashrut, which is the reforms in the kashrus, the reforms in regulatory and bringing things in, which we have an update on, very exciting one later on in the episode. But there are two important laws that we'd like to discuss now, which have been brought up recently, which are very problematic. The first one is an abortion law. It's not exactly a law. It's more of changing how the regulations behind it. It does involve some legal proceedings in the Knesset, but it's more complicated than that. We'll just go over the general scope of what will happen now. The current status of how an abortion in Israel takes place. A female who wants to procure an abortion has to go in front of a committee and make her case, and they will decide whether or not an abortion is justified, suitable in this manner. The committee is usually made up of religious representatives, health representatives, mental health representatives. It's actually a very official and committee that tends to be very professional and discreet on this matter. They don't inform the parents, which is a discussion unto itself, but not the point. the current health minister, from the left, who is Nitzan Horowitz, who is the Minister of Health, and other members of the left who are current members of the coalition, are putting forward to do a complete reform of the how abortion takes place, pretty much opening the doors to abortion in this country. And this is where it might surprise some of our listeners. Whilst we are libertarians, we are also very conservative on some things. And this is an issue where abortion, I happen to believe, is murder. Abortion is not acceptable. Aside from the fact that as a country, we do have some moral stances, especially as a Jewish country, a Jewish state, there's some moral stances that we must take. This is something that is not justified and cannot be acceptable in our society for us to allow. I accept there can be extenuating circumstances in some manners, and not delving into that right now. But this is something that cannot be allowed. As to the specific arguments against abortion in this case, basic arguments are to the fact that the child's life is just as much right to life as any other being. It is a being unto itself, and murder in this case would not be justified.
So I think that it's a little more complicated than that. I think it really comes down to understanding what's in this law, okay? There could be obviously things that are very problematic in a law that allows abortions, and it's also not black and white to the other direction of not allowing any abortions in any situation. Is there more details on what the rules they're planning to put into this law?
So, as with almost anything in Israel, they tend to talk a lot in advance, and then the language of the law only comes out either right before or after the bill is passed. Currently, the exact language of the law does not appear, but what they have stated so far, and this is a quote from the Twitter of Nitzan Horowitz, who is the Minister of Health, that they are going to move the control and the decision-making away from the committees and towards completely to the woman herself. And to quote, to move forward true change. Now, to be clear on my stance on this, I happen to believe that unless it endangers the life of the mother, it is not legitimate to commit for abortion. Irrelevant to that fact, this tends to imply, and again, the language of the law has not been specified, we'll update this when it comes out, that the abortion case in this matter would be that they will be allowing abortion and it will be the decision of the mother. Up to what point, I don't know, and it wasn't specified, but again, in my point of view, irrelevant.
I think it is relevant. I think that, first of all, his view on this is very clear. It's a very liberal view. It's like most of the left in the United States looks at the view on abortion. I think that it really is just a very, very complicated term, and it's very difficult. A lot of what you said is correct. A lot of what you said also ignores a lot of other issues, like single mothers that are suddenly going to that, you know, what time they find out they're pregnant and whether or not they're going to have this baby, and this baby's just going to suffer the rest of their life. If the baby's sick, if you know, there's many, many other factors, and it's not as simple. Even if many times in the end the situation will be correct to your statement of the baby has rights as well, the fetus has rights as well, but I don't agree that it's that simple and that black and white, and I think that there are many, many other factors that need to be brought in. And that's why I think that the committee is a legitimate solution. Or if you want to be correct, I don't love the idea of a committee because it kind of feels like as a woman I'm coming to ask for someone else for approval. But I do think that there are many factors. It depends on how this committee is built. If the committee is from people from different types of people in the country, from medical professionals and psychologists and other women that have gone through it, and maybe there's a better system, but I do agree that the system can't just be a free-for-all where any woman could decide whether or not at any point in her pregnancy she could terminate the baby.
I happen to disagree with you. We're not going into the specifications of the debate on abortion itself because that we don't know the specifications of the law here. But to be clear as to my opinion on this matter, and I could argue this extensively, I don't agree that, except for the health of the mother, there's ever a legitimate reason to perform an abortion. But again, we will update as the specifications of this law come out.
Okay, so let's move on to our next topic.
So as we stated, there was two laws that we had that were very problematic that were pushed forward in the past week. So the second one we discussed a while ago. There was a committee that was formed to look into Facebook and other social media platforms on different issues that they form. As a result, there was a language for the law that was finally brought up. This is not the final language. It will go through many committees again, but this is the general move that they're going for. In section 2 of the new law, titled Tzav la'asarat Tochen, which is a mandate from the courts to remove any justification, okay? There's three different options here, which is saying a judge of a regional court can give a order to remove anything from a web, from a different platform. If one of the different options comes on, if A, there is a, it breaks a law by going up, or it has the ability to break a law by going up, it can threaten someone's safety, or it can threaten the safety of the country. And, or it has, this is the more problematic thing, it can, I'll read in Hebrew then translate, בנסיבות העניין, יש בפרסום לסכן באופן קרוב לוודאי, את שלמו הנפשי של האדם. There is a good chance that it will threaten the mental health of the person. To be clear, as always with Israeli law, they leave it very, very vague. All of these terms leave a lot of leeway in the hands of the judge to pretty much decide whatever he wants to be removed from a platform, a social media platform, can be removed. And I can promise you, looking forward, that you can see this very much one-sided. You can I can easily see that anything about a left-wing parliamentarian's family will be automatically be removed from websites because it threatens his well-being. But anything about the Netanyahu family, which there's a lot about on the internet, especially on different social media outlets, will never be removed, even though it might threaten their mental health. Also, stating that it might threaten someone's security, again, is very vague. All of these laws in general, you're giving, once again, to the courts an immense amount of power without burden of proof that needs to be substantiated in this case in a legal manner to be brought forward in front of a judge. You're giving a judge a lot of power over what has essentially become the market, the free market of ideas.
Okay, now, do you see the issue as the fact that it's too vague and gives the judge power, or are you seeing an inherent issue with the law in the first place?
So, two separate issues. I don't like the idea of the law, and I don't like if you're going to institute this law, which is a way to look at it, because as we discussed in the past, the main issue with Facebook and other places is that they're meant to serve as a platform. They don't provide censorship, and therefore, if they don't provide censorship, they're not liable. But if they are providing censorship, which as we've seen in the States, they do sometimes do, then it might be time to step in and have some regulatory standpoint saying, if you are not standing by, you're not, by the fact that you're a platform and you're providing censorship, then there are some legitimate guidelines that you have to stand by. And if you're going to go down that path, which I don't agree with, but is a legitimate path forward, then you have to have the option here of stating, if you're going to write it down the law, then you have to write laws down clearly. It tends to be a very common trait of Israeli law, lawmakers that we do things with half strength. We only do it halfway. We have an idea, we go with it. We don't sit down, think through all of the different options you're going out here. You're saying, but the judge, of course, will understand what I'm saying. Great. Let's say every judge in the country today knows what you mean. 20 years from now, 50 years from now, 100 years from now, will this judge know what you're talking about? Probably not. And that's where the justification for a law and the language of the law is so incredibly important and is never given enough attention to. And at this point, which is why this law is, again, a very bad law that is being put forward by not such left-wing members of this party from the coalition, but from a general members of this coalition and some support from the opposition.
I agree with you. Any law, from my perspective, that pushes that gives more power to the courts is a bad law, in my perspective. Especially a vague one that gives, you know, I've mentioned this a couple episodes ago. To me, the biggest thing is that as a citizen of the country, I should have a clear rule book. The rule book's job is not to make me a good person. It's not the country's job to make me a good person. That'll be very clear about. I decide what I declare as a good person, and you decide what you declare as a good person. Those are different. As long as we don't hurt each other, and that's what laws are for. They're not for me to tell you how you need to live your life as a good person. It's for you to me to make sure that you don't affect my ability to live my life as a good person.
And for all of those that are going to say, but how can you say that we want to ban abortion? Just to back to that, once again, the fetus itself and the child, the unborn child, has rights onto himself. But continue.
And my point is that when you come to a law book, it's the same idea. I wake up in the morning, I know I need to obey the law, and if I obey the law, then I will be okay, and I will go to bed this coming night as a free person. I don't need to wake up in the morning and say, let me see how I'm going to be a good person because the government wants me to be. No, that's not my job. It's not a government job. If I want to be a shit person and I want to wake up in the morning and I want to sit around and do nothing and I want to not help anybody, that's my right as a citizen to do. And that's where the rule book has to be set as well. And the problem with these laws, when they're so vague, is that I can wake up, go through my day, even maybe be a good person, but go through my day, technically obey all of the rules that I'm told I have to obey to be part of the society, and the courts can decide that they think what I did was wrong.
And just to emphasize that, what we discussed a few weeks ago with 0 plus 0 equals to 1, which is the court stated that even though everything you did was legal, they all bordered on illegal, therefore they're deciding what you did was illegal. Pretty much taking the legislative powers completely out of the legislator and the executive and granting ultimate power to the judiciary.
I think more importantly, it's taking power away from the citizen. And it's telling the citizen, you are not a free person in this country because you do not have the rights to do what you feel is correct by law, because it could end up just being not correct by law by the decision of the... Okay, for our next topic.
So, we mentioned two very bad laws that will move forward, and let's go on to one good thing, okay? We've mentioned in the past that the regulatory committees in Israel will be changed completely, the entire regulatory system will be changed, and the allotment of fruits, vegetables, and such things that are brought into the country is going to change. The biggest change so far of that is, was announced this week, is that Shuk HaChalav, which is the market of milk, which is anything that has to do with dairy, pretty much, is going to be changed completely. It's going to be opened up for people to be bringing in more products. The biggest issue currently with all of this is that all of the production of milk and the production of dairy products in general are completely supervised, and you're not allowed to bring in any new products. And just for an example how bad this can get, just a few weeks ago, a few months ago at this point actually, during the holidays, there was a massive shortage on milk and eggs in this country, and it lasted for a long time. Why did this shortage exist? Because you weren't allowed to make more. Not sure you weren't allowed to make more, you weren't allowed to bring more from other countries, because that's what the law stated. And the current Minister of the Treasury, who, I must say, out of the members of this government, has surprised me the most, is pushing this forward, and he's stating that he's opening it up for import and for more production on this matter, which is a great move that will have major repercussions for good moving forward economically for this government, for the country, long past the term of this government.
So I think this is one of those points that are actually so much more important than people think. And it's one of these points that, you know, many people have discussed with us, and many times we've discussed also, that they feel so lost with this government, and that there's so much wrong with this government. And you know what? A lot of that, if not all of that, is true. But they don't understand some of the massive, incredible things that are happening and can only happen in this current situation of the government. See, part of the deals were that now that, you know, the lefting was able to come in, they got some basic laws, including, for example, the tax on plasticware, which, as much as it hurts and it really sucks for the citizens, but it's so negligible when it comes to the massive tax laws and economy in the country. And also, it can be flipped over tomorrow. Okay, a new government is formed in a year from now. They come and say, we're removing the tax on plasticware. It's a law that can always be taken back. Although these laws that are being passed, and they're being passed by, and I am the last person to support him, but Avigdor Lieberman, the Minister of the Treasury, and Oded Forer, the Minister of Agriculture, have been passing law after law that are
fundamental and changing the entire deal between the government and the citizen in Israel on the economic spectrum. We've had in the past where we've said that the deal between the government and the citizen in Israel is a very strange deal for Americans because the government is very involved in the lives of Israel, of the citizens. And this is a step backwards. The government is taking a step out. They're giving up control, which is a precedent, which is very odd in the world because governments don't like to give up control.
Well, that's the thing, and they're opening up free market. And it's just unbelievable to see, and for all those listening, to understand the economic value for this country is massive, and they're doing it law after law, and they're doing it quietly. No one's talking about it. No one's making a fuss about it. And you know what? It's because I think they don't even understand. The left-wingers that are against these values don't understand how massive these laws are for our future.
That's a very good segue into the next thing I wanted to talk about. Bennett has been failing recently, and in a true utter failure of policy and of politics. I voted for him, and if he wants to retain my vote for the next time around, he has to change his focus, and he has to mostly change his messaging. Messaging has been his consistent issue since he joined politics, but specifically in this area, stop focusing on Corona and Iran. They're important, okay. I happen to think COVID's not the most important thing right now for this government, but accept it, they're important. Your biggest sell point is going to be economics. And that's one of the most important things for Israeli is right now, because that's what's making their lives the most difficult. Economics is hard on every Israeli and affects them long term. Every child in Israel goes up knowing that most of this country ends the month in the minus. And the smallest change affects the pockets of every Israeli substantially, and that's where he can make his arguments, because his arguments are going to be, this is where I succeeded, where every right-wing government for the past 40 years has failed miserably. And that should be his play. And he's been going in the completely wrong direction. Just for example, the restrictions on travel for COVID because of the Omicron virus, which we discussed last week, which was only meant for 2 weeks, and everyone was discussing that they might end it early, were actually extended by another 10 days. And not just that, Bennett was pushing for a complete lockdown for anyone who isn't vaccinated, or vaccine mandate for everyone in the country. This is a radical step from what his ideals were and his values. Most of his voters, or at least most of the people that we know that voted for him, are libertarians at heart, not just economically, but also on their rights and views on things. And this statement, because of a variant that doesn't seem currently, again, from the current data, to be that much different than anything we've seen so far, or any more dangerous, it is a fallacy that cannot be accepted and should not be accepted in this government. The left-wing factions is going to the Minister of Health, who, to be clear, is a radical leftist, who would love nothing more than government control. He was the one stating that this is government overreach and citizens have rights. And if he's the one that's correcting him and the Ministry of Health is saying all of these actions are unnecessary, then he's clearly taking steps too far and he's clearly over-radicalizing here. Mainly, because of Netanyahu, because he's saying that Netanyahu has been hitting him on that his failure is COVID. And so stop focusing on COVID. Take control of the messaging. Stop reacting and start acting. You have good things you've got done. Stop focusing on this. Of course, there's still things to be done. And yes, COVID cases are rising, but that shouldn't be your main focus in this scenario.
So I agree and disagree. I think that when it comes to COVID specifically, it's so complicated. And I think there's the public question and then there's the tactical question. Publicly, I agree. Put yourself away. It's kind of a lose-lose situation here. You do something to hate you. You don't do something to hate you. Focus on things that you can do positive that will make life better for your citizens. On the other hand, it is something that has to be dealt with and cannot be ignored. And I actually said and I stated that I think that their original dealing with the Omicron variant was very good, very quick, very fast. But as we also mentioned, I think that the release of things should be just as fast once they have the information. And it's very strange for the added 10 days. Although this is where I'll disagree with you. You were stating that he should push aside the focusing on COVID and on Iran and focus on the economy. Here I disagree with you.
One second, let me clarify. Not in actions, in messaging.
So if we're focusing on messaging, I can agree with you. But we have to understand is that Iran is still the most important faction in our country right now. It is the most important problem that we have to deal with and the imminent danger that we have from that country. Okay? And it is crucial. And this is where the problem is that it has to be public. It's not public for this country. It's public for the states. It's these public statements are the ones stating to the Biden administration, when push comes to shove, we will have to act, and we need to make sure we have that support. Whether or not we're going to have it, it's
important. Again, you're off on what I'm discussing here. I'm not saying, of course, okay, the head of the Mossad was there last week. The defense secretary was there last week. Bennett had a discussion with Biden about that last week. All of that is incredibly important, and that should be public. But when he gets up and fights about his performance in the Knesset, stop focusing on COVID. Stop focusing on Iran. Because you're not going to win public view on that. And public view is saying Netanyahu is better on you in all those options. Aside from the fact that if you're going to over-radicalize on COVID policy just because you're doing bad politically, that's not fair to your citizens, and that's complete overreach. And it's not helpful because you're also losing the faith of the citizens to obey the instructions when it needs to be done if there actually is a serious health crisis again.
So I agree. I think it comes down to the idea, and you touched that point, is his ability and his need to beat Netanyahu at his job. And I think he can. He just needs to know how. Don't try to beat him on Iran. I agree with you. You're not going to beat him on Iran. You're maybe going to match him. Maybe. Okay? When it comes to Corona, you maybe could beat him, but it's not an interesting enough topic for the people to want you to do it in the first place because the country is split to two different directions on how you're supposed to deal with Corona, and therefore, you always win and lose depending on regardless for what you decide. The one factor in this, I'll agree with you 100% that we've stated this before, the one factor you can definitely destroy Netanyahu on is economics. Because Netanyahu, which was a great Minister of Treasury in 2003, since he became Prime Minister, it's basically agreed upon by everyone that he was just terrible for the economy. And this is the place that Bennett should put full force, for his economic views and the Singapore plan and everything, and just like smile to people and be like, see, look at what I'm doing that Netanyahu was never able to do. Look how I'm making your lives better. And that's where I think he could thrive.
Especially if he wants to get reelected again, or even if he wants to get back into the Knesset with a legitimate sized party, he needs to just be able to answer the simple question. This is a question that Ronald Reagan coined when he first ran, which was, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? Or however long he's been in power at this point. And that is a simple question he needs to state. And if he can just make clear all the economic moves he's moved forward, then that answer will be very clear to people. Are you better off than you were 4 years ago? On the economic side, probably yes. And that's what he needs to push on.
Okay, so for our next topic.
So, since we've discussed Netanyahu, there was a bombshell interview that was dropped this morning on Channel 12 News, recordings of Trump for preparations for a book that is being written in the States at the moment. It is supposed to be published next week, where Trump attacks mercilessly Netanyahu, stating he betrayed me personally. He even goes so far as to curse him, and he states, this is to quote Donald Trump, "No one has done more for Netanyahu than me. The Golan was a pretty big deal. I did it before the elections and it helped Netanyahu a lot. If it wasn't for this, he would have lost the elections. And the first person who ran to congratulate Biden was Netanyahu. Not just did he congratulate him, he congratulated him in a recorded video. That was a terrible mistake. I haven't spoken to him since." And then he said, F him. And he continues on, "I was very disappointed in him from Bibi on a personal level. I loved Bibi and I still love him, but I also love dependency and loyalty. The first person to congratulate Biden was Bibi, and he could have sat quietly, but he did it in a video recording." And Trump continues to discuss Iran. He says, "I remember when Bibi Netanyahu came to the United States to beg Obama not to do the Iran deal. Everything that Netanyahu got from Biden is the Iran deal. That's all he's going to get for him. I don't understand how Jews can vote for Biden or Obama with what's been done with the Iran deal. If I didn't come, I think Israel would have been destroyed." So on and so forth. And he continues to say, "No president has ever done more for Israel than what I have done." And then in typical Trump move, he states, "In Israel, I'm the most popular person because they understand I'm not running for election in Israel, so it doesn't matter, but I hear my popularity numbers are through the roof there." Point being here, he continues on, and we'll discuss one more thing he stated in a moment. This is a pretty serious attack on Netanyahu, especially from a person that Netanyahu is considered to be very close with, who Netanyahu had supposedly gotten a lot of support from. There's a lot of people in Israel who say that none of this would matter. Trump isn't a political player anymore, which unto itself is a debatable matter, but he's not on the political stage in Israel that much anymore. And Netanyahu himself isn't in power, but if he wants to run again, this wouldn't affect him that much. So that's not that simple. First, a big portion of the American voters that voted for Netanyahu also voted for Trump. They're similar voters. They're people who supported Trump. And they're not going to be that happy. And they're not that happy with Netanyahu and stating this and stating the issues that Netanyahu had, especially that the Golan was just a political move by Netanyahu, and that coming out so blatantly was very problematic. And a specifically even more problematic thing is that Trump goes so far to state that Netanyahu never wanted peace. This is a quote from him. Netanyahu never looked for peace, never really seriously wanted peace. This is a lot of sentiment that a lot of Israelis have felt on the left and the right, that Netanyahu's biggest concern ever is the status quo. He's maintaining things as they are, because he thinks in the long game you win. But for a parent of a child who had to go serve in the army, that's terrifying. Because I know my child will have to go to a war. I know there's a chance he might die, but it maintains the status quo. And if you're saying that Netanyahu never seriously wanted peace, and the Trump panel was maybe stalled because of him, or was changed because of him, or was delayed because of him, that's a big deal. And that's something that's going to affect his voters a lot. And especially if it gets the play in the media, which I'm sure it will. It's not as simple as a lot of people have made it out to be, as just Trump speaking and spewing nonsense.
So I think that, first of all, I don't think it's going to affect his voters, because I think the people who vote for Netanyahu are voting for Netanyahu because it's Netanyahu. Really nothing else matters. I think, look, I'm hearing you read this out, and I happen to agree with like 99% of what Trump is saying. You know, I agree that he, from Israel's perspective specifically, I'm not talking about his decisions within America that affected America for the good or for the bad, specifically for the state of Israel, Trump was, if not the best, at least one of the best presidents in history. That is almost undebatable for the state of Israel. And I think that everything he's saying right, except for the fact that he just has to understand politics, and Netanyahu didn't really have a choice. Because guess what? Biden is the president of the United States. Whether or not it was fair, unfair, whatever Trump feels about it or Trump voters feel about his election, the fact is he is the president. And therefore, Netanyahu has to congratulate him because he has to congratulate the president of the United States even if you don't like him.
Of course. And of course I agree with that. I don't even agree with Trump's assessment that Netanyahu should have waited until everything was closed or that he shouldn't have done it by video. I don't think any of that matters. I think it's important for Israel to maintain a good relationship with whoever is in power in the American political system, albeit from whatever party it is. That being said, I do agree that Trump's criticism on that the Golan was just to help Netanyahu get reelected instead of something that that Netanyahu should have pushed and vied for years, and that he finally got to, and now he finally got the opportunity to do it. And he'd done it, and he's saying this was just a political move. It's not going to portray well. And just on top of that, stating that Netanyahu may have been the reason that peace was forestalled, and Netanyahu never wanted peace and never wanted it to move.
I have absolutely no doubt about that. Netanyahu's whole idea is keeping things the way they are because that's the thing ways he control. Of course, it's a problem. But this isn't new. This isn't surprising. This is the exact people that vote for Netanyahu saying we don't care about the truth. We don't care about the truth, we care about the person. And he needs to be the prime minister. Nothing else matters. And you know what? Almost everything Trump is saying here is the truth. You can like it or not, but it's the truth. It's the truth about Netanyahu in the background. It's the truth about his views about not wanting to move forward, not actually supporting the right wing of this government, just keeping things afloat. Now, overall, can you be worse than Netanyahu? Of course you can, because you could make things worse, but you could also make things better, and he did neither.
I agree, and I think it's going to be I happen to think that his voters, whilst tend to be very loyal to him, have certain things that they want done. And whilst a lot of them do support the status quo, they also see, even with all of, if the messaging could be changed from this government, they could see this government, even if you don't like things they're doing, function. This government existed. The country didn't fall apart. The country didn't die.
We're very far from there right now. And now we'll move on to an old return segment, Dumb Economics of the Week.
So this one is a decision that we hope won't actually pass. Amir Peretz, who is no longer an actual political figure, who is was the head of the Avodah, he also was a big partner of Benny Gantz when he joined Netanyahu in the government. He was the longest sitting, I believe, member of parliament at his time. He was there for a very long time until he was finally removed from parliament in the previous elections. Now he is, because of Gantz, set to be the head. It's a pure political appointment, but they usually are. The head of what's called the Tasiyah Havit, which is the...
Israel Aerospace Industries.
Exactly. Which is a very important position that holds a lot of power, especially electorally, because there's a lot of unions in there. And on top of that, he has stated that he wants a million shekel salary. To be clear, the salary of the previous... holder of the position was 750,000. This would be a jump up of 25%, and he was stating because he'd also be working 25% more. Don't know if this is accurate. It is an obscene amount of money for a public figure to be receiving, especially since, to be clear, he is a blatant socialist who doesn't believe that people should be getting a lot of money at all. So it's I think it's a little ridiculous and hypocritical for him to be demanding such salaries on the public dime, no less. When he considers that everyone should be getting equal and equality for all on the economic scale.
So I think there's a couple things just to state. It's not exactly on the public dime. It's a public company, but the company still makes its own income, which out of that is cut to him. It is still partially from the taxes, obviously, but it's not just a direct public figure that's being paid by taxes. I think my issue here is deeper. It's not an inherent issue with the amount of money he's getting paid. The inherent issue goes back to how we discussed last week that a committee to decide if public figures are announced was built for this exact reason. It was built to make sure that they don't become political figures in public positions, because they have to make sure that they are qualified and not politically enough. He went through the committee decided both. They decided he's definitely still involved in politics and he is totally underqualified for the position. That's infuriating. Now, even though that we've seen in the past that the Yoamash, Avichai Mendelblit, the Attorney General, came up and stated in the past that if the committee disqualified someone, then he cannot be put into that position because it's showing that it's against the public interest. Now, let me be clear very clearly, I'm against the Attorney General being ever involved in these decisions, although I do agree with the idea. The committee is designed for that. Now, if the government's going to come and state that we think the committee was corrupt, the committee was unfair, then maybe I could hear it.
Or the committee was wrong, which is a legitimate
thing. I'm saying it's fair, but if saying, oh, the committee is legitimate what they said, but I'm anyway going to go against it and hire him, is exactly what we have a person in a position that is managing one of the more important organizations in this country that does not have the qualification or the experience. And that is the point when it comes to the salary. Now, the idea is that if I need to bring someone who was a manager of massive corporations and knew how to do exactly what the aerospace industry's needs, and he cost a million shekels a year, I'm okay with that. That's an expense that we could decide is legitimate. But he does not have that qualification. And with that, we would like to conclude this week's episode. We welcome back Binyamin. Thank you for joining us. He will be here every week. He just went on a short vacation. We will see you next week. Thank you for listening. We remind you to share us on social media to broaden our audience. We'll see you next week. This is Here We Go Again.